Blog Talk Radio.
Friday night, and we have nothing to lose. Wow, and we have a beautiful guest. Really seems like a really wild, crazy guy. His name is Ron Whitehead, and he is the Hillbilly Outlaw Poet from the one and only Louisville, Kentucky, or for some of us who like to say Louisville. And this guy's got a beard that I think rivals yours, Mr. Gasinski. Mr. Gasinski and Dr. Thanks. Quinn, are you both there, guys?
We are
here.
Hey guys, beautiful. Here we go. It's another Friday night, nothing to lose, and yeah, this Ron Whitehead guy, he's got a lot going on. He's another one of those multitasking, super talented types that we'll bring him on here shortly. But you know, in the meantime, there's some bullshit going on, you know, the internet and, you know, Facebook, whatever. It's like a virus. It's called bitch strips. Yeah, I've been bitch stripped.
Are you still on that?
Oh, yeah, the bitch strips. It's like this some sort
bitch,
of
when
horrible,
I get home, I'm making you one.
Awful
I'm
virus.
I'm making you another one.
Oh, whatever. Okay. I mean, okay.
You're getting another one.
Yeah, okay. So give me your opinion on this whole bitch strips, bit strips craze. I mean, it's worse than like some sort of zombie virus. I mean, come on, it's like the apocalypse.
Oh, Why does this have you so fired up? That's what I want to know.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, because every time I update my news feed, there we go. Another bit strip from somebody, everybody, everywhere in the entire Facebook universe is doing bit strip.
What I don't understand is why it just all of a sudden caught on. It's been around for a while. I mean, you know, Wilson Beck has been doing bit strips ever since I've been friends with him. So, I know.
Isn't that funny? Like, he's the first person I didn't know anything about bit strips until Walter Beck. He was kind of like one of those, let's say,
the pioneer,
pioneers,
if you will.
He was kind of a pioneer. He was like before anybody else. And all of a sudden, just boom, there was an explosion. Bit strips from hell everywhere.
And I noticed, though, since the explosion has happened, he doesn't do bit strips anymore.
He moves on. Walter Beck III is too cool for school. He sees the trend.
The other day, he used to do several a night, and now it's calmed down to one the other day, I guess.
Yeah, see, he's too cool for school. He sees the trends before they happen. He makes them happen, and then he moves on to something else. So whatever, we will all follow. Walter Beck, if you're listening or if you hear this, buddy, we miss you, and you know what? You are a trendsetter, and we will be following you and looking for the next trend. Yeah, this whole bit strip thing. I mean, come on. I mean, seriously, is it not out of hand? I mean, is it not just...
I just want it's a cool avatar with a beard, That's all I want.
And it looks just like you. That's what's so damn funny. I don't know why every time I've been bit stripped, I look like some sort of weirdo wearing like some sort of a Confederate kepi with like a blue hair and a blue beard. That's just weird.
Oh,
that's how you really
how I
look,
made
right?
You asshole. Because you have, I couldn't make your beard brown, but in order for you to have your blue hair.
My blue hair.
I gave you your blue hair.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very much for that, as Elvis Presley would say. But, so moving on. I mean, I'm sure there's more important things going on in the universe besides this bit strips phenomenon. My goodness, what else we have going on here, guys? Oh, geez. Football, baseball, politics.
Basketball.
Yeah, all that shit. And we also have, oh, my God. What else is going on in the universe here? We had really bad storms here last night. Tornado warnings and stuff going on. Like windows, we had the windows open because it was hot. Actually, last night, and that's weird. Yep,
right.
Here in Ohio, right here in Ohio. But, it seems like still the whole twerking thing in Miley Cyrus. I mean, the chick makes headlines regardless. All she has to do is stick her tongue out, and she makes headlines. And, I got to admit, I have a slight crush on her, but I digress.
Yeah, that's you.
She's a wrecking ball, man. She's a wrecking ball.
Did you go with Miley for Halloween, Brian?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said, did you go as Miley for Halloween?
No, I went as a creepy man wearing a diaper and nothing else. So I just like this hairy, looking ogre. With wearing an adult diaper.
No, get out. Imagine my surprise.
Carrying a pumpkin. A little pumpkin, trick-or-treat thing. So,
at least
pretty
you're
much...
accessorized with a pumpkin.
Hey, speaking of pumpkins, Julie's with us right now.
Julie is, huh? Well,
yep.
Okay.
I shuffled her on. Hold on.
Hi, Brian.
Okay. Julie, well, hello. Good to hear from you again. How was your Halloween? Did you twerk?
I did not twerk myself, no. That
no?
No. You don't want to see that.
No, that would be Siren B slipping in butter, right?
We'll do it at our release party. We'll twerk. That's going to be our thing, instead of the butter. We're all going to twerk.
Poets twerking. Speaking of which, yes, Blotterature, you guys, this is the final night. Submissions closed now, or they you have another hour for submissions?
Submissions are officially closed.
51 minutes.
Wow, okay.
51 minutes, actually. So hurry up, people. Central time.
Central
50
time.
50 minutes.
So how's that going for you guys? How's the whole Blotterature dynamic going? When's this issue going to be out officially?
January 25th. We're going to be on time. We're going to be on time, Brian.
Zing. Ouch. Okay. All right. January 25th of 2014?
Yep.
I assume? Okay. Yep,
and that's
wow.
That's when our party is going to be, so get your panties ready.
Oh, and there's going
to
be an official release party?
You're coming to Northwest Indiana, motherfucker.
Speaking of which...
Yeah, and Kaczynski can't come because they went and bought a house. Damn it. The hell.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Kaczynski's going through the whole house thing and moving.
We can't do anything fine because we have to have lodging. We
have to have lodging. Wow. Alex, that kind
of... Yeah, it's the whole Omar thing is a new thing to me, and it's all pretty interesting how many hoops you have to jump through. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I've been there, done it, and I am living in it right now.
Yes, you are.
Yes, I know exactly what you're going through. But at the same time, you have to jump through a lot of hoops, but at the same time, it's rewarding, too, especially if it's someplace.
Is it?
It is. Because you'll like it, you will love it, it will become your home, it is your home. All right, when do you guys officially move in, Mr. Kaczynski, to your new house?
We don't have the exact closing date yet, but sometime in December, mid-December, I think.
Yeah.
So we're still filling out paperwork. There's paperwork to fill out so you can fill out paperwork. It's ridiculous.
Well, I know. It's ridiculous. It's like paperwork.
You know what it is?
Paperwork.
Everybody wants to get a piece of their pie. Everybody wants some money.
Okay. If I may interject for just a moment, Julie and I just passed by a billboard. Michael Bolton is going to be at the Four Winds Casino, guys.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I
know, right?
Yeah, that's very fascinating. All right. Well,
is he going to do that song he wrote for Kiss or what? I don't know.
It just said Michael Bolton is going to be performing at the Four Winds Casino.
And what is it about Michael Bolton that turns you on? Is it his receding hairline?
I said
pseudo mullet.
The receding hairline turns me on. That's what it is.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and the extra large 5 head.
Wow, you must really like Klingons, huh? It sounds like a Klingon.
Absolutely. All right, carry on.
All right, yeah. You gals, let me know when you get a little settled in here and ready to talk some more, because we're going to bring on our featured guest here real soon here, Mr. Ron Whitehead. Yes, this guy has so much going on, so much cool stuff. And, you know what, Dr. Quinn, you keep those bit strips in your panties, okay, from now on, all right? Yes.
Nope, I'm making one of you when I get home. You watch.
You bastard. You know, I think I think actually, hello, Walter Beck, is this you?
It's me.
Here we go, hey. Walter Beck. Here he is to interject here about the, Glad to have you on here, Mr. Walter Beck. What's going on, buddy?
I'm drunk. What else?
Join the crew. So we've been discussing this whole bit strips thing, you know. And,
you're a trailblazer, Walter.
Yes, you are a trailblazer, absolutely.
How exactly am I a trailblazer when it comes to bit strips? Am I the first out of all the co-hosts to have them, or?
First person I've ever seen to have them.
Yes.
With Mr. Walter Beck III, yes, you. the bit strips. And then, you know, it's like you kept doing those little bit strips. I'm like, oh, this is unique. This is different. And then all of a sudden, a couple months later, boom, it just mushroomed and just went viral, the bit strips everywhere. And I was like, I was literally like vomiting through my hand because everybody was doing it. So
you were
doing it,
you know, Brian, your thing was, you know, you were vomiting into your hand out of envy because I did it first.
No, it had nothing to do with that. No, no, it went viral and it just like beyond viral. Just yeah, just kind of creepy. I mean, like everybody, everywhere. Wow. So hey, well, Mr. Beck, glad you're here, man. And you know, tell us how's your show going? What the Rainbow Asylum? What is it on Saturday nights or Sunday nights? It seems like you kind of changed the date.
Well, it's funny. We originally moved it to Sunday because of my work schedule, and of course, I had dropped out of this show because of my work schedule, and then I got fired.
Oh, you got fired? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
what happened?
Fuck Amazon.
Oh, you were working for Amazon. Okay.
Yeah, they fired me because I wasn't moving fast enough.
Well, how do you not move fast enough for Amazon? What exactly does that entail? I mean, that's kind of curious.
Well, I was, you know, I was working in the warehouse, and I was what they call a picker. You know, I was a guy who took the product from the shelf, put it in the cart, and took it over to the shipping guys.
Right.
And you have to meet, you know, you have to get X number of products per hour, depending on what your job is for the night. And I wasn't moving fast enough for them, so they cold-bloodedly fired me.
Wow. Okay. So what are you doing now?
To the listening audience, don't buy shit from Amazon.
Because you can't box their shit quick enough for them, or what?
Because they treat their employees like crap.
Really? Well, that sounds like a typical establishment.
Yeah, it sounds pretty American, you know. Sounds like every country, or, you know, all companies treat their employees like crap.
But on a better note, the Rainbow Asylum is going great. We're the number one rated show on the Outright Arizona network.
Oh, sweet!
Nice.
We had our first celebrity interview last week's show. We got to interview Maris the Great, which was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We did switch to Sundays. We're going to be live on the air this Sunday night.
All right. What time?
Say, you know, it'll be on at 8 p.m. Arizona time.
Which is mountain
time.
That's mountain time, yeah, mountain time. So that would be 7 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Mountain,
well,
9 p.m. Central.
Yeah,
10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is the most important time, actually, Eastern Standard Time,
exactly.
By the way.
That matters, yeah.
But, yeah, since I got fired, I thought I'd just call in and say hi to everybody.
Well, good. So, if you don't mind, excuse me, if you don't mind me asking, what's going to be the main topic for your show on Sunday?
I'm sorry, say that again.
What's going to be your main topic for your show on Sunday?
As
Rainbow Asylum.
As you know, Brian and Michelle and Gazinski and everybody, you know, all the co-hosts, I guess, here. You know, we don't really run a theme show. You know, it's all improv.
Right.
You know, and it's designed that way, really more to relax my co-hosts than anybody else. I mean, you know. God love him. You know, Mike's just a great guy. He's a great co-host.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's kind of the original idea of the show. I mean, you know, because he does, you know, two or three shows a week, you know, which proves that I guess some people really do have more free time than I do. But, you know.
And do you mind if we say his name? What, say his whole name? Your co-host on the Asylum there? The Rainbow Asylum?
Mike Shipley.
Mike Shipley. Okay.
Mike Shipley. You know, his other shows are, you know, are very, very structured. You know, his other shows are mainly, you know, like hardcore political shows. You know, they're usually very structured. He has a topic focus. He has a guest. You know, part of the idea of the Rainbow Asylum was, you know, let's just get on the air and just do it. Let's just relax on the air. Screw it, you know. And so far,
right.
It's worked.
Right. Well, good.
You know,
I've heard a few of the shows, and they're pretty funny and entertaining and a lot of good music.
You know,
definitely a lot of good music on there,
well,
too.
Well, we definitely got a lot of nice, rare gems to play on the air on Sunday. I'm digging up a song that maybe we should have played on the first show because, you know, I mean, you know, we're basically a queer comedy show, for lack of a better word. You know.
Wow, that's
so
politically incorrect. But go ahead.
Well, since when did I care about politically correct? You know, I mean, in all fairness, you know, you're talking about a radio show that's hosted by two hedonistic cocksuckers. You know.
Wow. Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. I'm glad you said I said I would have been an asshole, but. But yeah, go ahead.
But anyway, you know, so I was digging through my archives, you know, trying to find a songs to play because, you know, I program most of the music on the air. I mean, Mike digs up a gem here or there because, you know, we have different music tastes, so he'll come across something that I normally wouldn't come across, and we'll play it on the air. But I was digging into my bootlegs, and I found a really good kind of an obscure, unreleased Rolling Stones song to play on the air Sunday night. So, got any Stones fans listening if we haven't tuned in?
Oh, wow.
Okay, excellent. Yep. Well, hey, we are going to bring on our featured guest here, man. But first, what we're going to do here really quick is we're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance because every episode we do the Pledge of Allegiance, we're going to all stand up, put our hands on our hearts, and take off our hats. And Dr. Quinn and Julie, take off your – please remove your hair pieces as we do the Pledge of Allegiance here. And then we're going to bring on our featured guest here tonight, Mr. Ron Whitehead, the hillbilly outlaw poet hailing from Louisville, Kentucky. All right, here we go. Pledge of Allegiance, here we go. This is this gets me every time. Oh, God.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is it indivisible or invisible or the invincible Iron Man? I don't know. But, man, that applause and everything at the end, that dramatic music, man, it brings a fucking tear to my eye every time. But, yeah, let's bring on our featured guest here tonight, Mr. Ron Whitehead. I mean, this guy has so much going on. Hillbilly outlaw poet. I mean, oh, my God, and he has a beautiful beard that I envy so much. So we will bring him on here, and he's a poet, an editor, publisher. I mean, he has so much going on, and it's going to be exciting to hear about his current projects and some of the things he's experienced in the past. This guy he's been around for a long time, man. I'm telling you, it's going to be exciting to hear what he has to say. We're going to bring on Mr. Ron Whitehead. Mr. Ron Whitehead, you are on live.
Hi there. Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Check, 1, 2. Testicle. Yes, Mr. Ron Whitehead, you are on. Wow.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm happy to be on. The Bone Man dances circles round the subterranean gloom, paints pink and blue and purple until he fills the room with the smell of roses and a pandemonium moon. I will not bow down. I will not bow down, America. I will not bow down to your government, to your religion, I will not bow down, America, to your materialism, to your international corporations, to your religious shrines, your stock markets, your shopping malls. I will not bow down, America, to your coal mines, to your power plants. I will not go crawling down the deep shafts at midnight. I will not bow down, America, to your invasion of privacy. To your invasion of privacy, to your moral absolutes, your religious political might. I will not bow down, America, to your assassins, the CIA, the FBI, the corporate police state, your killing, murdering machines. I will not bow down, America, to your bureaucracies, to your schools, to your attempt to make me the model citizen of your state, of your church. I will not bow down, America, to your history of lies, to your secrets, in the best interest of, to protect the people. America, I pledge allegiance to those who were here before you, to those who will be here after you are gone. America, I pledge allegiance to the woman I love. I pledge allegiance to my children, to my grandchildren, to all my children to come. I pledge allegiance to my friends and allies, my guides and angels, both seen and unseen. America, I pledge allegiance to poetry, to music, to art, to the literary renaissance, to the global literary community. I pledge allegiance to the beat, to the outsider. I pledge allegiance to meditation, to stillness, to magic, to beautiful mysticism, to ecstasy, to awe and aha, to the Big Bang epiphany, to altered states of consciousness. I pledge allegiance to seeing into the occult, the unknown, to seeing into everyday, into the ordinary, and being amazed. I pledge allegiance to the sacred and the profane, to Gnostical turpitude. I pledge allegiance to my physical body and to the knowledge that I am more than my physical body. I pledge allegiance to seeing more than the physical world and to those of higher frequency, vibration, and consciousness. I pledge allegiance to passing through the sacred fire, to entering the upper chamber of the Golden Pyramid, to levitating over the open sarcophagus, to out-of-body experience. I pledge allegiance to the hottest sex and to gentle affection. I pledge allegiance to fractal geometry, the geometry of clouds and coastlines, to 2 times 2 = 5. I pledge allegiance to failure, to failing as no other dare fail. I pledge allegiance to taking risks, to holy daring, to namioho renge kyo, to accepting responsibility for my own actions. I pledge allegiance to not achieving the American dream of success, America. I pledge allegiance to trees, to green grass, to brown earth, to wildflowers of every color, to wilderness, to turquoise Native American skies, to rivers, lakes, and seas, to healing the earth. I pledge allegiance to the Holy Spirit, to the Word, and to silence. I pledge allegiance to dreams, to birth, to the journey, and to death. I pledge allegiance to candor, to sincerity, to laughter, to irony, to passion, to compassion, to empathy, and to helping those in need. I pledge allegiance to resurrection of the heart. No, America, I will not bow down. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Mr. Ron Whitehead, I will not bow down. Excellent. That's sort of your mantra there, isn't it? That's your main poem there.
I will not bow down. I refuse. I will not bow down. I will never give up. That's the title of my 28th book that was released in April by California's Cook Creative. They call it Ron Whitehead's Greatest Hits. It has a lot of my work that's been translated into many languages.
Wow.
And just this week, the companion double CD to that book has been released, and the title of it is Searching. Disc one is Searching for Jack Kerouac, and I guess disc two is Ghost Lover Transmission. And 17 musicians accompanied me on that. We recorded it back in January at Kevin Nordstrom's Smoke Town Productions in Louisville, Kentucky. And that's just the unofficial release is just this weekend, and then the official release will be in December in conjunction with For No Good Reason, the documentary on Ralph Steadman hosted by Johnny Depp, in which I am the track announcer, voice only, for the Kentucky Derby is Decadent and Depraved segment of that film, For No Good Reason, was released at the London International Film Festival. But Sony Pictures bought the North American rights, and they're releasing it in the U.S. in December, including a Louisville, Kentucky premiere, Louisville, Kentucky, the home of my friend Hunter S. Thompson.
Yes, yes.
So there you go.
Wow. Yeah. You're originally from Kentucky, right? What?
Yeah, I grew up on a farm in Ohio County in western Kentucky, the fifth largest county in Kentucky, where Bill Monroe and the Monroe family, the Monroe boys, grew up. Birth of bluegrass music took place in the same place where I grew up. I come from a large family. My mom's the oldest of 13. My dad was one of 11. I'm the oldest of six. There are hundreds of members of our family, and my mom and my granddad, Raymond Dick Render, they toured and performed, and the Everly brothers are cousins, and they would sit on the front porch of the old Monroe home place at Jerusalem Ridge in Roseanne, Kentucky, and play with Bill Monroe and Charlie and the Monroe family. And then Granddaddy was a jack of all trades. He was a barber. He was a construction worker, a big heavy equipment operator. And they would have jam sessions in his barber shop with the Everly brothers, and their dad, Ike and Mose Rager, would perform, and Mama sang alto, and they could all play any instrument they picked up. And Mama's sister, one year younger in age, Jo Carolyn, sang soprano. And then they would go over to Muhlenberg County across the Green River near Paradise and to Drakesboro, to a little community called Brownie, and play and do the same thing in Mose Rager's barbershop. And Mose Rager taught the Everly brothers and Merle Travis everything they knew about music. But that's the kind of tradition I came up in. I grew up in the pioneer lands of Kentucky on a farm, a mile and a half from Centertown, population 323.
Wow.
Left home when I was 17. I've been wandering the world west with my poetry taking me all over the world for the rest of my life, especially for the past 25 years since I've been living and being my dream.
Right. Well, see, that's very fascinating to me because my dad is originally from Kentucky as well. West Liberty. Are you familiar with West Liberty, Kentucky?
West Liberty is that in it's central western part of the state. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, West Liberty.
It's in the area of the Cornbread Mafia, where all the best marijuana.
Cornbread Mafia.
In Kentucky. Yeah, it's where the best.
That's great. I like that.
The best. You know, our number one cash crop is marijuana, and you know, I'm certainly for the legalization of marijuana. The war on drugs is, you know, one of the great farces we've had to endure, political football. But Kentucky is known. Unfortunately, they ship the best marijuana, you know, to other states and other countries, and it's hard to get good Kentucky marijuana here in the state. But we're known for that. We're known for that. West Liberty is so your
West
dad's
Liberty.
From there?
My dad's from there, yeah. He grew up on a farm there.
Really?
We own land there in that area. That's awesome. And you know, I find it very fascinating. I mean, you have so much going on, but you just brought up marijuana being like a major crop there, and you're pro legalization. Here we go. I mean, that's something very fascinating for us to kind of diverge and talk about, because you know these shows, I like to talk about stuff, you know, beyond just you know, writing and literature and all that, because
as adults we should have the freedom to decide, to determine and to be able to do whatever the hell we want to do, whatever we choose to do, as long as we're not hurting other people. And
I agree.
And so the Netherlands, where I've done six tours, is it's an incredible country, beautiful people, and actually they're much more of a traditional people than you would think. But they, I mean, from the earliest age, they're taught to use and not abuse drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, except in Amsterdam where they have so many tourists, I mean, they have more crime there in Amsterdam than in the rest of the country, but they have very little crime in the Netherlands. They're just a good people, a really good people, and level-headed, smart thinkers. Northern Europe and Scandinavia, I lived in Iceland for 2 years, and but Northern Europe and Scandinavia have the highest standard of living of any countries in the world. And they have more lenient drug laws and in all those countries, and next to no homelessness. And when instead of treating people who have drug problems or issues, instead of treating them as criminals, put them in federal prisons, used in the prison industry since we made prisons big business, the fastest growth industry in the 90s, so we could start the slave trade all over again. In Northern Europe and Scandinavia, they treat people with drug problems just like anybody with health, physical health problems. If somebody has a cancer or a broken bone, they're treated the same way. So America is in the dark ages in so many ways, and I've lived here, there, and everywhere, and I love the United States. I love Kentucky, which to me is a nation unto itself. It's not like any place else. It's like Iceland. There's no other place on the planet like Iceland. But the United States, one reason I've chosen to stay in the United States is because I am on the front lines here of all the worst shit that's going on in the planet, as far as, you know, our government, our colonial empire having too much power, too much control, the NSA, the invasion of privacy, other moral absolutes, the Homeland Security. You know, I rewrote the Declaration of Independence, updated it, and you know, people need to read the Declaration of Independence. You know, we should be standing up to our parent country, the United States of America, and our federal government today, just as those folks did, Thomas Jefferson and everybody else who signed the Declaration and who stood up against their parent country, Great Britain, and forged a new government. And there was a lot of bloodshed, unfortunately, when that happened. But
right.
Most Americans are asleep today, sheep. You know, following, listening to their leaders and abiding by the laws. And I choose to be an outlaw because most of the laws that have been created and made into law by our federal government should be illegal. And I choose to not abide by most of them. And, you know, I do as much as I can without getting locked up in a pen. I taught college and university for 25 years, and I taught, including in a federal penitentiary in LaGrange. So I performed in federal prisons with different bands that I've had. I've had several.
Really?
Bands. Yeah, toward the United States and Europe. I've over 6,000 performances I've done around the world. About 5,000 of them have been with musical accompaniment, and I love all kinds of music. You name it. I mean, from punk bands to just straight up rock and roll, to jam, to classical, to blues, to jazz. So I love, you know, the main voice. People ask me, what instrument do you play? And I tell them I play the main instrument of all, the first instrument, the voice. And my friend David Amram, who, check out davidamram.com, 82 years old now, soon to be 83. David's one of the most amazing composers, musicians, people on the planet. He did the first jazz poetry reading with Jack Kerouac, 1957, brought an art gallery in New York City. He performed with Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, Thelonious Monk, Lionel Hampton. He did the soundtracks for Manchurian Candidate, Splinter in the Grass. He did Shakespeare in the Park. He was Leonard Bernstein's first guest composer for the New York Philharmonic. He's done Barmaid with Willie Nelson every year. David can He's the number one most performed composer of classical music living in the United States, and he conducts symphony orchestras too, and he taught me that listening is the greatest art of all, and the voice is the main instrument, and all other instruments should just stay right behind the voice a little bit when the voice is included in whatever the musical composition is. So anyway, I love music. I love music. So what the hell is going on, man? It's good to practice some hangoutology with you.
It's good to hear your voice.
What the fuck is happening? What is happening?
No. I mean, hey, man, yeah. You know, I think, I actually published you quite a few years ago in Zygote My Coffee number 86, and it was I Will Not Bow Down, the original poem that you you read right at the beginning. Yeah.
I swear. Well, thank you. Now, tell me your name again.
My name?
Yeah.
I'll make up one. I'm going to make up one, then I'll tell you my real one. My name is Mitchell.
My real name is Ron Whitehead. You know,
okay.
I'm an open book, and the fucking NSA, you know, all the spy agencies, the federal government, the FBI, the CIA, they can listen to me, they can film me, they can photograph me. I'll get naked in the middle of the square. I don't give a shit. You know, I got nothing to hide. Failure is my greatest success. And so anyway, it's good to meet you, and thank you for publishing I Will Not Bow Down.
Oh, yeah. It was in I Got My Coffee number 86, I think May 2007. My name is Brian W. Fugier. Yes, Brian Fugier is my name. Brian Fugier, yeah. Or a lot of people like to call me Fugget or Fuck It.
Good.
Fuck It. You know what? I prefer you just to call me Brian Fuck It or just Mr. Fuck It. for the rest of the evening.
Well, Mr. Fuck It, that's fine with me.
Excellent. No, but seriously, so yeah, man, the thing is, okay, well, first of all, you're in a band and you're a poet and everything else. What was some of your initial inspirations early on? You know, as a kid and everything, as far as writers or music or whatever, that inspired you and moved you to, you know, go in this direction that you've been all around the world. You've done a lot of great things, and you've got this whole Storm Generation thing coming up here. And yeah, the band, the Storm Generation. You're in a band currently called the Storm Generation. Is that correct?
Yeah, we just did some shows. I started I climbed the Viking Mountain, solo climbed it in May of 2008 in Iceland. It's a historic mountain there when the Vikings first arrived, and they sent, according to the legend, they sent a Viking up the mountain every day because you can see so far in all directions to see if, you know, anybody was coming that they might need to guard against. And so I was in Iceland with, like I said, I lived there for 2 years. It's my second home. I go back as often as possible. I was there. I took my wife, Chin Fuller, with me. She's one of the best photographers and poets on the planet. She went with me in June and July. I was there with Nick Storm, and Storm Generation Films accompanied me to film for this two-hour documentary they're doing on me.
Oh yeah, that's something we got to talk about. I've been following that. Yeah, when's that going to be out?
Nick has 100 hours of film. He's editing down to 2 hours, which he'll have done by the last day of this year, 2013, and then the goal is for it to be released in 2014.
Uh-huh.
So much incredible footage from different bands I've had, different tours I've done, U.S. and Europe. He's got all the footage from, just for one example, the official Hunter S. Thompson tribute which I produced December the 12th, 1996, here in Hunter's hometown of Louisville Memorial Auditorium. That was filmed by A&E, Wayne Ewing, who's a Hollywood filmmaker, filmed it. Other people, New York Times wrote it up. And so he's got the footage from that, which includes, I brought in Hunter, I brought his mom, Virginia, his son Juan, I brought Johnny Depp, Warren Zevon, Roxanne Pulitzer, David Amram, a whole lot of people. It's a 2,000-seat hall, standing room only, four-hour event. It was such an awesome event. So he's got that film footage, just some of which is going to be included, and footage from, you know, I was blessed years and years ago. I had the first underground bookstore and head shop in Kentucky, in Lexington, and I sold the books by, you know, everything the City Lights was bringing out. Lawrence Furlong Getty's a friend of mine. Founded the first paperback bookstore, City Lights Books, which is a mecca for independent publishers, editors, thinkers, writers, poets from around the world, 261 Columbus Avenue, North Beach. And that he founded that in 1955. He took over in 55. But so I had no idea when I was running this underground bookstore, selling the first Rolling Stone magazines, which Hunter S. Thompson put on the map with his serialized version of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I had no idea that I would end up meeting, becoming friends with, editing and publishing and reading and practicing hangoutology with the people who I was selling the books by at that time, but Allen Ginsberg, Lawrence Furlong Getty, Gregory Corso, William S. Burroughs, Diane DePrima, Mary Baraka, Hunter, and there's a long list of people.
Wow.
And it's strange how all of that fell into place, and that has to do with being called to meet and have contact with and touch and receive a message from the Anna Mitchell Hedges crystal skull nearly 25 years ago. The main of the 13 crystal skulls, which opened after that, so many doors opened for me. I met the Dalai Lama and Ginsberg and Furlong Getty and Corso and all these people shortly after that. The Dalai Lama and I wrote a poem together titled Never Give Up. And so all of this is going to be in the documentary. My introduction to Gregory Corso. Gregory is, you know, one of the best poets ever. Members of the so-called Beat Generation consider Gregory the best poet of all of them. And,
really?
And Gregory had a temperament similar to Hunter's. And Hunter was a Southern gentleman on the one hand, but he was also the mad genius on the other hand, and I, you know, was with him sometimes when he would go into that realm.
Really?
The mad genius, yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. Okay, this is very interesting to me. okay, so you are definitely were involved with the Beat and the Beat Generation. I mean, what's your personal opinion of the whole Beat Generation, or what do you think, you know, how do you think people perceive the Beat Generation now? Is it just some sort of like kind of kitschy, like nostalgic thing? Or
yeah,
I mean, if you were actually there. You were actually there
and I still am. And I have so many influences going back to what, you know, my first influence was when I fell out of Mama's vagina. The first thing I said was, Mama, where's it happening? And she pointed left. She pointed left, and I've been going left ever since. So that's when it started. That was my first influence. And then I grew up, like I said, in a musical family. My mom, Greta Render Whitehead, and her sister Jo Carolyn sang at every funeral and every wedding for miles and miles around, and me being the oldest of six, oldest grandchild in this big family, kids, Mom and Joe and my aunt Joe Carolyn took us kids to every funeral and every wedding in the whole area. And so that's one reason to this day I get weddings and funerals confused. And
that's great.
And that's the truth. And that's the truth. And so, you know, I heard this, like, old-time mountain music going, you know, going back to Appalachia, to Ireland and Scotland and Wales. And I love that music. It's in my blood, in my bones, in my DNA. And but I heard that, and I tell you, there's nothing like a mountain Appalachian funeral where all the women are keening, that high shrill. All these women are just shrieking like banshees, and it's like you're talking about the hair standing up all over your body, and then that, and then people climbed, like I remember Pappy climbing on top the pine coffin, trying to keep Mammy from leaving him behind, and that music is combined with all those elements, you know, terrible things and beautiful things and beautifully terrible things, and so that was my first influence with the music. And then Ed Sullivan was, you know, big Sunday night. Everybody gathered around the TV and watched Ed Sullivan, and he introduced the world to, you know, Elvis Presley. He introduced black music to white audiences. And
absolutely.
And us kids were sitting on the floor watching Elvis, you know, gyrating. And, it was, you know, I remember my mouth would be open and, like, thinking, what in the hell is this? And I loved it, and it was like electric. And and my parents, my dad said, turn it off. And but my parents, they were glued too, and they really they didn't turn it off. They watched as well. And right about that time, the gospel quartets came on the scene and started performing in at revivals in little churches. I was raised Southern Baptist, I started questioning and rejecting that. All my family's still Southern Baptist, but I started questioning and rejecting that early on, and started reading all about other religions, and ended up, I'm not religious, I'm deeply spiritual, and I, you know, I think I don't try to convince anybody.
Between being religious. Religious and spiritual. I agree.
You know, somebody's got a religion, respect it and honor it. Just don't try to cram it down my throat. And so I want everybody to, you know, believe whatever the hell you want to believe. Do whatever you want to do. I don't give a damn. Let's just all, you know, let's carry on a dialogue. Let's be open and honest with each other. And even when we disagree, let's still be respectful of each other.
Exactly.
And instead of us fucking, you know, everybody's just drawing lines in the sand these days, and the dialogue has ceased. It's, you know, my way or the fucking highway. And, you know, I don't, and then you end up in a war, the history of the human race. And I said, there's a better way, and that way, for me, starts with dialogue. Let's just... I love heated debates. Even if we argue and you get in each other's faces, you know, let's maintain the respect and know that, okay, you got your opinion, I got mine. We don't see eye to eye on this subject, but we still got more in common than we have different. We're human beings. We live on this planet. We're fucking this planet up, and we got to stop fucking it up. We got to start healing it and making it more livable for and sustainable for everybody. And let's quit killing each other and raping and pillaging and all that shit. And you know, let's just, you know, let's drink, let's smoke some weed, let's hang out, let's listen to music, let's read some books, let's talk about shit. It's
You know what? I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, so many wars throughout history has been because of, differences in, like, religions and beliefs. I mean, what's still going on now? You got the Sunnis and the Shiites and or whatever you call them, you know, there in the Middle East. And just, and you still
and
have
you
here, you know.
Tea party and the
tea party. Tea party.
And the Republicans and the Democrats now are a bird with two right wings. They're the same party, and they're both terrible, despicable, we need to have I was invited to Iceland, and the Minister of Culture sent three people. With Al Aronowitz, who's passed way now. Al Aronowitz was the main rock journalist who introduced the world to the Beatles, Rolling Stones, and Bob Dylan. And he's the guy who took Bob Dylan to the meeting to meet the Beatles, and he took the marijuana and turned the Beatles on to weed for the first time. And but anyway, Ginsberg died in April of 97.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so Al and I, Al Aronowitz and I, produced the Ginsberg tribute at the band shell in Central Park in New York City in 1998. And people, I invited people from all over the world. Many of the folks who had translated Ginsberg's works into other languages came, a lot of other people. It was an amazing time. In Iceland, the Minister of Culture sent three people, Michael and Danny Pollock, legendary musicians from Iceland, and Birgitta Jónsdóttir, who I ended up living with for 2 years in Iceland and encouraged her to run for parliament. And I was in Iceland in October of 2008 at their biggest festival, Airwaves, which is going on right now in Iceland. It's one of the best music festivals in the world. And I took my band Southside, a band at the time, a kick-ass band, and we did five shows over there. And it's when the global economy collapsed, and Iceland was the first to get hit, and they got hit the hardest. Such a small country, 330,000 people, they went bankrupt overnight. And so we were there for the first massive demonstration outside of Parliament in downtown Reykjavik. And so we demonstrated with Birgitta. Birgitta Jónsdóttir, she's one of the three principal members of WikiLeaks. This movie, Fifth Estate, somebody plays her in it. She's formed with the pirate. And I told Birgitta at that time, I said, okay, you ran for Parliament a few years ago. You got a lot more votes than you thought you would. I mean, Iceland has a number of parties, not just two, the Democrats and Republicans, and then, you know, the couple others, but we were there which are really not parties in the United States. But they have, you know, like seven or eight, nine, ten. So she got the pirate party in Iceland, made it a legitimate party, and she just got elected for her second term, and three members of the pirate party got elected to Iceland's parliament. And she is really, I mean, she got the country back on track economically, and they have made massive changes. The old boys club they're doing everything to take over again now that the economy's become more balanced and legitimized again. So she's waging a new battle against them. But she's trying to turn the country into the first all-green country, make it a safe haven for WikiLeaks journalists.
Oh, really? Whoa, that's very interesting.
No, it's major shit, major stuff. I mean, Iceland is leading the pack today in this sort of thing, and it's you ought to check it out.
Wow. So anyway, you bring up you bring up so many interesting things to me. WikiLeaks, I mean, what's your personal opinion on WikiLeaks? I mean, do you think that's treason here in the United States, or
it's not treason. I think our government is treasonous. Our government is doing everything against its own people. And first of all, we should not have Homeland Security. Read the Declaration of Independence, a standing army in our own country. Hell no. We shouldn't have Homeland Security, and our government doesn't do jack shit for us, the American people. It's only concerned with itself, with the federal government, and it's time for a revolution in the United States of America.
Wow,
it's
do you think so? Revolution? Would it be a revolution or a civil war? I mean, what do you think it would?
Well,
How do you think it would happen?
Well, you know, people tend towards, when it comes to disputes, especially something where so much power is at stake with our federal government, they're not going to rule in. They're not going to give up the power that they hold, which seems to be impenetrable, seems to be omnipotent, all-powerful right now. But you know, like Burroughs said, you know, he said there's too many of us. They can never, you know, take over the internet. They keep trying, but there's too many of us. There are too many loopholes. There are too many smart people like the WikiLeaks people, and that number's growing. There are more and more people who want to be part of, who are becoming part of WikiLeaks, the WikiLeaks movement, which is a movement for a freedom of expression. People need to read the Bill of Rights and start with the first one, with the freedom of speech.
That's something else interesting you bring up, the Bill of Rights and everything. I think it's getting kind of molested and sort of
it has been
interpreted, you know.
Act.
It's like it's all like it's very subjective now, and like the government finds a way of sort of taking it and molding it to whatever needs they, you know, that fits, you know, the situation.
And all their needs are self-centered, narcissistic. They're power mongers. They never, it's like, gimme, 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 like the narcissistic ego. It's like the hungry ghost. They can never get enough. They will never get enough. And they're going to keep on. And two of the worst are Kentuckians. You know, it's embarrassing that Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, senators, are from Kentucky. You know, Mitch McConnell is one of the most deceitful, sinister figures ever in the history of this country. He sold the United States to China a long time ago. Rand Paul is a freaking idiot. You know, Ron Paul's son, and all his funding comes from his dad. You know what's really weird about that? I was invited. I have no idea how. Just a bizarre thing. I was invited when Ron Paul, last time he ran for president, I got some messages, you know, to invite it to read a poem at the Louisville Palace, which is like the main music venue in Louisville, where the big rock bands play. I've read there a couple of times. Read there with My Morning Jacket and North Mississippi Blues All Stars.
Oh, wow.
Finish
what you're talking about.
That sounds like a whole other fun thing to talk about.
So I go to
the Ron Paul thing where he's giving his I'm stepping down from my run for president speech. And so I'm backstage with all these people are like looking at me like, how in the fuck did you get in here? You know, and I'm looking at them like, and I'm thinking, what the fuck am I doing here? And so I go out and I already decided what I'm going to read. And so I read Tapping My Own Phone, and I got a standing ovation when I read it, which was recorded and filmed, but, you know, I've looked for it. I haven't been able to find it. I got a feeling all people took it down.
Here's the poem.
It's not long. Let me just
interject. Your main
this.
Website, though, is Tapping.
Tapping My Own Phone. TappingMyOwnPhone.com. Check it out. Yeah, as soon as you click on there, you'll see and hear me reading I Will Not Bow Down.
I will not bow down, like you just introduced us to.
President Jimmy Carter, I got the Secret Service were flying helicopters over my house. I got it's like a bizarre story.
Seriously,
hold on a second.
Okay, time out here for a second.
Okay.
You really think Jimmy Carter and that everybody, they were flying helicopters over your house, or was that just some sort of paranoid
Listen, I was getting ready to go teach at the University of Louisville where I taught for 5 years. I got a call from, God, it's a long story. I'm not going to go into all of it. But I had published two posters by President Jimmy Carter, poems that he had written with photos of him on them. I published over 2,000 titles. I got a call. They had... I'm not going to mention any names here because...
Okay, that's fine. No, you don't have to, yeah.
But the Secret Service called, and they had... I had got the insider, the secret mailing address, and so these packages with Carter's copies of the posters had arrived, and they didn't know, you know, the Secret Service didn't know who the hell I was. There's this normal screening process that, presidents the rest of their lives. If they're not the active president anymore, they still have Secret Service people
who
go through, because they still get death threats and all this stuff every day. So they got any package, any letter's got to go through all these Secret Service people, and these packages didn't. And so the Secret Service, like, they got the bomb dogs and the bomb equipment out, and they slipped one into the box open and pulled one of the posters out. It had my name on it. And so they did immediate tracking and called my ass and said, you are in trouble, boy. And so if you don't, you know, call this person within the next 5 minutes, you're going to hear helicopters flying over your house. And as soon as you're fucking saying that, I hear helicopters flying over my house. And I'm like, oh, shit. I did not make it to teach at the University of Louisville that day. I spent the whole day on the phone with the Secret Service, getting all that shit worked out, which I finally did. And turns out President Jimmy Carter loved the posters. But that was hell. But what came out of it was, and I've been going through a lot of, I've been involved in activist activities since the 60s. And so, I'm, you know, FBI files and all this stuff. And and so there's always some weird shit going on. So, but I got this poem out of it. It's titled "Tapping My Own Phone." I'm going straight. Bought myself a flat top haircut so stiff I can carry a tray of martinis, waiting on people, someone to open up her purse and give me a tip, cause I don't have a clue anymore as to what's going on. But I do know that I'm one step ahead, tapping my own phone to hear myself talking with people who used to be my friends, listening so I can correct myself before they do. And I've got a surveillance camera in my abandoned car across the street, watching myself replaying the tape so I can see if I'm acting funny before they catch me doing something I shouldn't. Like yesterday, I spotted myself walking too fast and I heard myself talking too loud. Yes, I've got the deep fear, paranoia, anxiety, despair, and suicide blues. But I'm making sure I don't do nothing else wrong, because I done screwed up so many times I cornered myself into a back street dead-end alley of paranoia. And every time I hear an airplane or helicopter or car door slam, I know the Secret Service, the FBI, and the IRS SWAT teams finally arrived, because I published a poem by the president of the United States of America without his fully conscious permission. And I'm sure I haven't paid enough taxes, because I've got no income, yet somehow I keep on doing things like eating every once in a while and paying a light bill or two. But how do I do it? They're going to ask, what's the source of your income and how come you don't come to see us anymore? So, yes, I've become a little jumpy, but I'm staying one step ahead, tapping my own phone, videotaping my every move, watching myself day and night, replaying the tapes, because I got a bad, bad, bad case of the deep fear, paranoia, anxiety, despair, and suicide blues. So that's a true story. Oh, shit.
Man. Okay, you know, okay.
So what else do you want, what else you want to know?
What else do I want to know? I mean, oh, good Lord. You have, I mean, you have, what, 28 different books?
I got, my 29th book comes out.
Yeah, what's your latest book coming out? I mean, let's
okay,
talk about that.
Okay, earlier this year, I told you about the one that came out in April. I refuse. I will not bow down. I will never give up. Came out in April. Then in June, I've done a lot of I've done many tours, U.S. and world tours, and I toured with this group called Non Grata. Non Grata, a diverse universe. They home base in Estonia, and but they constantly tour the world, and so they got members all over the world. People from countries around the world perform with them, and they just do everything, and they're just really out there. They've done two world tours using poems I've written as the title, the name of their tours. Like Zero Tolerance was one of their world tours. A Zero Tolerance poem I wrote after BP destroyed the Gulf of Mexico. And another tour they did was the Storm Generation tour. And I wrote that poem, Storm Generation Manifesto, after climbing the Viking Mountain, May of 2008. Where Ólafur Gunnarsson, Iceland's leading novelist, and I produced the one and only Beat Generation Festival in Iceland. And so Okay, what was your question?
Wow.
No, wait a minute. Okay. Life is a tangent. Everything is connected. What was it that started that? You said something. Oh.
You know what? I don't even remember either. You know what? Let's just... that's perfect.
God.
Let's just digress to,
There's no such thing as that digression. It's just one topic after another, and they're all connected. So what do you want to talk about?
It is. Your beard. I mean, it's immaculate. I just... I'm a little bitch elf boy, and I cannot grow a real beard. I've tried,
well,
and I cannot do it.
Hey,
how long have you been cultivating that?
Okay.
That,
well, after 9/11, I said, "Fuck it, I'm not shaving my beard, not cutting my hair again." And the weirdest thing that happened. When I was 40, all of a sudden it was almost like overnight the hair started falling off my legs and appearing on my face. And so now I can grow a beard. All I had before was just raggedy ass, typical poet's beard, wild hair here and wild hair there. And now I just got a bunch of wild hairs. And so it looks like I got a beard. Yeah.
But, I must confess, the hair started falling off my legs back in my, my late 20s and early 30s. And it started falling off my head too. But it would not appear in my goddamn face, in my chin, where I wanted like a good, real, manly man beard. I cannot cultivate it. I swear to God, I try to grow a beard, and it looks like I have like moss growing off the side of my head. It's pathetic, and I'm so jealous. And my co-host, Mr. Michael Gasinski here, he's cultivated one hell of a beard here within
the
last year.
Hi, Michael.
Hello, how's it going, Rod?
It's going great.
I want to know, Rod, what was it like playing in federal prisons? What was it like playing
That's a lot like...
That was awesome.
That's a good
Johnny
question.
Cash.
That's a lot
okay,
like
I'll
Johnny Cash.
I'll give you, Johnny Cash did that.
I'll give you
just one example. One of the bands I had, which I created with my... Iceland brother Michael Dean Oden Pollock, who was an original member of Utan Garsman, the Outsiders, incredible punk band from Iceland. They perform with the Clash. They're legendary over there. So Michael and I formed this band called the Viking Hillbilly Apocalypse Review, and we did shows in Europe. We did a U.S. tour coast to coast. And so I set that tour up, and I set it up so we did, we went from New York to San Francisco and, like, everywhere in between, and I set it up so we did half of the shows in nature, like in national parks and other places, in nature, for nature, and we didn't give a fuck if any human being showed up, just us, because we were just doing it to bless nature and to commune with nature. And then the other half of the shows we did in venues, for audiences to get paid and to help fund the trip. And so one of the shows was in the LaGrange Federal Prison in LaGrange, Kentucky, which is between Louisville and Cincinnati. And there are like 1,800 or 2,800 ship. The prisoners in federal penitentiaries are they're forgotten people. They really are. And there's so many good people in prisons and people who have no business being in prisons, particularly drug-related crimes. And I encountered so many of those folks, especially teaching in the federal penitentiary for 2 years. But so we did the show, and it was packed. You could not move. And so we had... we're about a dozen members in the band, including some women. And band and the prisoners were it's one of the best audiences I've ever performed for, and that's saying a lot. But they were just totally with it, every note, every word. Olive, they didn't want us to leave. They just swarmed the stage, which is real interesting. Afterwards, hundreds of prisoners and all the guards were trying to, you know, get them away from us and everything. It's funny. The women didn't want to leave.
Does everybody get invited, every prisoner, or do they have to, like, be on their yard time?
No, just like, the ones on, like, good behavior.
Forget,
there were hundreds in attendance. I forget exactly how many, but there were several hundred.
Wow.
But it was an awesome experience. But on that tour, like, we did a week of shows in New York City to open my friend Bob Holman's Bowery Poetry Club, just some incredible performers from Iceland, from New York, from Kentucky were part of that. But along the way, I mean, we performed on South Rim of the Grand Canyon. We performed in Sequoia National Forest at the foot of General Sherman Tree, like it's supposed to be the largest living organism on Earth. And we performed in the Mojave Desert. We did a week of shows in Telluride. I had been invited to be the featured performer there for their 14th annual Talking Gourds Festival in Telluride, Colorado. Such a beautiful place. And I told them that I was doing a cross-country tour with my band. And so they hooked us up, and we did a lot of radio, TV, schools, and venues as well. So from Telluride, though, we cut down into northern New Mexico, and George O'Keefe's one of my favorite artists, and D.H. Lawrence is one of my favorite writers. I have many favorites in all the arts, but we went to the Lawrence Ranch where George O'Keefe painted the Lawrence Tree, and we went to the locations where George O'Keefe had painted some of her most famous paintings, and we set up
wow.
and did shows. And we filmed and recorded. And so Nick Storm, Storm Generation Films, has all that footage. We visited Al Farm, Hunter S. Thompson's home, and, at Woody Creek outside of Aspen. And so I set it up so we did shows like that. We performed at City Lights in San Francisco. We performed in the middle of Golden Gate Bridge.
Really?
Naropa in Boulder, Colorado. We performed at the City of 10,000 Buddhas in Ukiah, California, and just places. We performed at Big Sur. It was just fucking awesome tour.
Well, it sounds awesome. I mean, what was it like for you?
How do you get the energy to do all this?
Yeah.
How do you get the energy to do all this? You said something earlier about smoking weed. No way.
No. You know what? That reminds me. I got a lot of friends in California, and I've done a lot of shows in the whole Bay Area and in Northern California. And so a buddy of mine who's a DJ on the two main radio stations in Northern California, where my CD, I Will Not Bow Down, was number one on the charts at the main Northern California radio station, beat out Neil Young and My Morning Jacket and bands. And I recorded that CD with my band at the time, but it was number one on the charts for 3 months out there. But anyway, I did a show, and after the show, my buddy who's the DJ came up to me and said, introduced himself. We became good friends after that, and he said, Ron, I've got a gift for you. I hope it doesn't insult you if you just hold your hand out. And so he lives in Redwood Forest, and owns 20-some acres. He built his own house out there. It's beautiful. It has a recording studio in it, recorded, done interviews there. And he grows his own marijuana there. And so he gave me several joints. And so we went for the after party to friends, and I took one hit off of one of those joints. I was sitting in the same spot for 3 fucking hours staring at the wall.
Are you serious?
So,
staring at the wall?
Yeah,
what were you thinking?
I hadn't smoked any stuff like that since the 60s. It was so powerful.
Great.
It was unbelievable. So anyway, I was born, to answer your question, I was born with high metabolism. It runs in my mom's side of the family. And a lot of creative psychics, artists in that side of the family. And so I've just, all my life, I don't require much sleep. And then when I started living my dream and being my dream, I built a bridge from where I was. I've done over 100 jobs in my life. I started working when I was 5 years old. Like I said, I grew up on a farm, but I sold Christmas cards and Grit magazine door to door when I was 5 years old in Centertown.
Grit. Oh, okay. Okay. Time out. Time
Grit,
out. I remember Grit magazine because I used to collect comic books when I was a kid. Oh yeah, I'm almost 42 years old. I remember Grit magazine back in the 70s. Yes, I used to collect comic books, and it was like there always advertisements in there for Grit magazine. You know, go distribute Grit magazine.
I did that.
And you did it.
I had the first skateboard, as far as I know, it was certainly one of the first. I thought it was the first skateboard in Kentucky. I was a little boy, and I ordered it was like a piece of wood on steel wheels, basically. But it was awesome. I've been an avid fan of skateboarding and graffiti all my life. But anyway, I've worked construction. I've worked in coal mines. I've managed businesses. But I just said, no. You know, I have a dream. I have a vision. I'm not doing this shit. I'm not working for the man anymore. And I started where I was 25 years ago. I built a bridge from where I was to where I wanted to be. And I've been living and being my dream for 25 years. And anybody who asks me, young people of any age, I just tell them it's never too late to start. And I don't care if you got a dream. Start where you are, and you got it takes every ounce of willpower. You govern, determined, but if I can do it, anybody can do it. And there's nothing that compares to living and being your dream. I mean, my God, it's incredible how things just start falling into place for me. Once I put forth that effort and got to this place, then it's instead of like, you know, beating my head bloody on doors, you know, trying to get doors to open. All of a sudden, the doors open. I didn't have to knock, and so for 20 years, once I got on this path, for 20 years, I slept 2 hours per night for 20 years. That's 7 nights a week, 365 nights a year. I drank 15 to 20 cups of coffee a day, and I took 12 to 14 Excedrin because it has caffeine in it. I finally had to switch from Excedrin to Tylenol because it was eating up my stomach. That's true. But I don't sleep that much. 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night is plenty for me. Yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, and some people, you know, I could be classified as a workaholic, but I was, the way I was raised and taught to work hard, to be a hard worker, to get a job done and to do it right. But when you're living and being your dream, it's not work anymore. It's just passion. It's pure,
unadulterated
passion.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
And so I'm like, you know, everything I'm doing is exciting. So it's not, you know, I'm unburdened of all the bullshit that society puts on us, that weighs us down with. You know, and I've worked at the factory. I've done all those kinds of jobs. I know what that shit is like, and it's terrible. At least for me it is. And, you know, bless the people who do it, especially those people who like doing it. I'm not one of them.
Nothing wrong with that.
Neither, brother.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I totally agree. But you know what? We have to give some credit to your girlfriend. We have to give her credit. Jen Bug, as she's well known.
Jen Bug,
great photographer. Let's give a little shout out to Jen Bug.
She is awesome, and she really is. and Jen and I known each other for 23 years, and we, in our wildest dreams, we never imagined that we would actually end up together. But we've been together for 3 years, and for 2.5 of those years, it was a real roller coaster ride. It was heaven and hell. And but I had something clicked, and we figured things out. And so it's better than ever, and better, mm-hmm. certainly better than ever anticipated. But we, just about every day, at least once, we'll look at each other and scratch our heads and say, how in the hell did this happen? Or something like that. This is weird.
Yeah, well,
like
you,
that,
know what?
You know,
That's just life. You know, that's, I mean,
yeah.
You know, I know, it's a typical relationship, you know, you yeah, that happens. But you guys seem to have a really cool dynamic going. And man, I got to admit, she is a very talented photographer.
She is.
She is, yeah. Is that her only like, art form, or does she dabble in poetry or anything like that?
She's one of, Jen's a genius poet, mm-hmm. and photographer. And
uh-huh.
person.
Oh, she's a poet, too. Wow, okay.
She's incredible. She grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, and grew mm-hmm. up on the East Seaboard, and grew up just on the ocean, sailing boats, and she graduated, like me, from high school when she was 17, but mm-hmm. Unlike me, I went to college for a while. I got a history major, a philosophy minor, then I dropped out for 13 years and traveled and worked. But she went on, she got a scholarship to Centre College, C-E-N-T-R-E, in Danville, Kentucky, and
wow.
graduated when she was 19. And,
wow.
And been working. She worked for years with homeless people. She
mm-hmm.
traveled around the country, and her job was to check on homeless sites,
mm-hmm.
Organizations that took care of homeless people. And but she is she's one of the most incredible artists, poets, and photographers on
really?
The planet. And yeah, and I have just she didn't get her poetry out there enough.
I've seen her photography.
I've been encouraging
her. I've seen
her. But she's a kick-ass performer, too.
Really?
I mean, really,
well,
really powerful. You know?
I yearn to see that. And, you know, I yearn to read some of her poetry as well, man. I'm not familiar with any of her poetry and all that. And that's cool that you let us know that, you know, she's a poet as well. Wow, there you go.
Yeah.
And, well, what's that
yeah.
like? I mean, two very creative artists such as yourself and she, you know, being photographers, being poets and all that. What's that dynamic like? I mean, because sometimes I have seen through the past here that, you know, two very creative souls and artists who converge and live together. There's not that yin and yang thing going on.
It's intense with capital letters and a whole lot of exclamation marks.
Okay.
And another thing that complicates it is, what makes it more interesting, it's simply complex. And one thing
uh-huh.
that holds us together is our love for each other. And
right.
But we have so much in common, we have so much different. But,
right.
but she comes from the Northeast, an affluent family, an only child. Her parents
uh-huh.
were Russian expert spies for the NSA. And they're divorced and retired and married to other people. But I come from, a humongous Kentucky family. I come from
right.
a long line of farmers, coal miners, holy roller preachers, and strong women.
Right, yeah.
And she looks at me sometimes and says, if anybody had asked me if I would be sitting across the table from and in a relationship with, this wilderness farm boy coal miner with tattoos all over him,
right?
And I got tattoos all over me. And
I've got one on my head.
I got a red dragon on my right cheek, which I got in Estonia from a red-headed Russian woman tattoo artist. I was over there on tour with a band, Son of the Widow, and performing, touring with Nine Gratidivers Universe. and an hour before the first show, I came out of this bar called Hell Hunt, and I looked over to my right, and there was a tattoo shop, and I said, I'm going in. I went in, I met the woman, I told her, I said, I have long before the movie or the book came out, I've wanted a dragon tattoo on my cheek. And so she got all excited, and she gave me the tattoo, and she was so excited, she gave me like a silver ring. It was a frog with green emerald eyes. And so then the venue was close enough that I walked there, and I got there 5 minutes before it's time to go on stage. So it worked out great. Yeah, so, but anyway, I got a lot of tattoos, too.
Yeah,
but it's difficult. It's difficult. We keep figuring out ways to make it work.
Right.
And because we both want it to work. But let me tell you, it's not easy. We're both like A triple plus personalities.
okay.
I mean, but she's more introspective, and she's more of an introvert, I should say, and I'm more of an extrovert.
Right. So, you're definitely an extrovert.
So,
I can tell just by the way.
Well,
so there is that yin and yang.
Yeah.
Kind of dynamic there, right? The yin and yang.
Yeah.
Introvert, extrovert, yeah.
Yeah. So I know you guys got other stuff to do. Can we close out by me reading the Storm Generation Manifesto?
All right.
Is that possible?
Yeah. You getting tired, buddy? It's late, I know. We're on Eastern Standard Time.
I am on Eastern Standard Time. I got up at 3 a.m. this morning. No, I'm fine, but I got a full day stuff scheduled for tomorrow, plus I got a show tomorrow night, which I guess is tonight now as well, a big show.
Sure, yeah,
so,
man, close us out. Go ahead and read.
Okay.
But
before I read this, I just want to say thank you all. It's been a blast practicing some hangoutology with you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Good having you.
Okay.
Yeah, and
so,
hope to have you on again, buddy. This has been great. I mean, you have so much more to share with us, and fun.
There's a lot of ground to cover. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anytime, just let me know.
I'll
close out with this piece. It's
okay.
In May 2008, I solo climbed the Viking Mountain in Iceland. Several people had been blown off the top of the mountain to their deaths. At the top, three times I was nearly blown off to my death. I crawled behind a giant boulder at the top of the mountain, and for 15 minutes I had a nonstop series of epiphanies. Then I stood up, faced the howling, screaming wind, uncorked my 1.5-liter bottle of red wine, which is all I had in my backpack, drained half of it, thanked the fierce Norse gods for finally accepting and embracing me. Then I made my descent and wrote this poem, The Storm Generation Festo. We tip our hats to the lost and the beat. We go our own way. We are the storm generation. We are the storm. We are a new generation of artists. We are poets, writers, painters, sculptors, composers, musicians, singers, dancers, playwrights, filmmakers. We are creative expression. We blow away lies and injustice. We are graphic. We are honest. We tell it like it is. We are fierce. We are brutal. We are compassionate. We are gentle. We are kind. We have soft hearts. We are free. We are spirit. We are sex. We dwell in the realms of the creative imagination. We are the creative imagination. We know that the shortest distance between two points is creative distance. We pay attention to the long-forgotten wisdom voices of the forest. We vanquish the overtly materialistic greedy who intentionally destroy mountains. We honor mountains and oceans and eagles and wolves. We cherish Mother Earth and all her terrible beauty. We are nonviolent spiritual warriors. We are lightning. We are thunder. We are song poems. We are fearless visionary poets. We have wolf eyes. We are more than the eye of the storm. We are the storm. We refuse. We will not bow down. We will never give up. We are God's open nerve. We are God's open nerve. We are the storm generation. We are the storm. The storm. The storm. Thank you all. Raise some hell. Have a good time. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on, man.
All right.
You've been great. Thank you so much. Wow. Yeah. Wow. That was Ron Whitehead. from Louisville, or for some people who are kind of incompetent, Louisville. But yeah, Louisville, Kentucky, poet. I mean, yeah, wow. Beyond poet,
that guy,
musician.
That guy cares so much.
I know. We could do a whole entire different show with him. All right. Yeah, you know what? Let's just segue to a little bit of Puff the Magic Dragon, take a pee break, and come back, and we'll talk about some other stuff. We'll elaborate on all this stuff and many other things coming up here next week, and, you know, things going on in the small press and in pop culture, twerking. And, yeah, we'll be right back.
Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh, Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu.
Every time in my no places. Yes, we are back here with Nothing to Lose on a Friday night. Wow. And yeah, we were just I don't know how to say it, assaulted or ingratiated with Mr. Ron Whitehead, our featured guest here tonight. Wow. He was pretty awesome.
He does so much. I mean, I say that about a lot of our guests, but I mean, he really does so
fucking much. It's, oh, man.
There's so much going on. Not only that, his energy, my God.
I couldn't keep up, man. I couldn't keep up. I got tired listening. I was like, wow, you know. I need a break.
Me too. I couldn't keep up with this guy. It's like, wow, okay. He's like, I mean, I'm an old man, comparatively speaking, but, you know, compared to him, I mean, I'm like 20-some years younger than him even, and he just like, boom, 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 boom. Wow. He has so much going on. I know. Makes me feel.
Red circles, yeah.
It makes me feel
four or five hours of sleep. Yeah, no way.
I used to be able to do that. you know, maybe when my kids get a little older, maybe I can handle that a little more. But wow, yeah, he was phenomenal, and he had so much going on. And yeah, you know, his girlfriend, the Jen Bug, the photographer, she's pretty cute. So good for him. Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll have him on again sometime in the future. I'm sure he has like tons of other stories to share and all that. I have to say, I mean, I don't know. Everything I don't know. I mean, I don't even know where to start with Mr. Ron Whitehead. We could do an entire different show, another show with him, you know. And he seems more manic and energetic than even Quentin Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino has always seemed to me to be this very manic, creative person. But man, this Ron Whitehead, not only just a poet, but a musician, everything else, and so much going on. It's just, wow. You know, I wish I had that creativity and that and that energy and drive. I mean, I admire that.
Drive, yeah.
Absolutely. My God. So anyhow,
yeah.
Where's Dr. Quinn? Dr. Quinn?
I'm here.
Oh, Dr. Quinn's here.
Yep.
All right.
I'm making a bit strip of Mr. Murray.
Oh, boy. You and your bit strip. Jesus Christ. Yeah, you know.
I made you one.
I don't even want to go there. You and your bit strips.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. All right. So, anyhow, my gosh, let's see how much time we have left here in the show. We still have another 16 minutes live here.
Plenty of time.
And then there's probably there's some really important stuff I'm sure we need to talk about. but Mr. Ron Whitehead was, he's a pretty hard act to follow. I mean, Lord. I got to ask you, Mr. Gacinski, about your beard, just really quick. How long exactly have you been cultivating that piece of artwork on your face?
I started growing the beard, I think, June 16th, 2012.
Really?
So, oh, yeah.
Is it high maintenance?
The day I quit my job. You know what? I've recent, you know, it's starting to get cold and it's getting drier and more staticky you know, with the weather. So I have this Australian beeswax, and I think I'm going to try molding the beard and waxing the beard. I think I'm going to try it. And
Australian beeswax, huh?
Yes.
Oh, wow. You know what? We didn't even get a chance to ask Mr. Ron Whitehead the usual questions, because he would have been great about, you know, the usual questions. About the whole, you make eye contact, you make love, and all.
We'll have to get him again, you know.
We're going to have to get him on again, for sure, and I think he'd be up for it. I mean, this guy's got more energy than I have had since I was, like, I mean, I haven't had that much energy since I was 6 years old.
Yeah, I mean, once I discovered once I discovered booze, my ambition went down the shitter, and that was.
Well, this guy. Well, Ron Whitehead. You know, he's all about the MJ and all that. And you would think that would slow him down a bit, but no,
didn't
seem to slow him down. It's a big crop there, actually, in Kentucky, I guess. So. Wow. Hey, we actually have another caller here. Let's bring this caller on and see what they have to say. Hello, caller. Caller, you're on. Hello. Hey, it's going good. What's up?
Not a whole bunch. I like that Ron Whitehead, man. He added pretty good stuff there.
Yeah? What did you like about Ron Whitehead?
He's real energetic, you know. He really puts his message out there, you know, in his poetry. It's really cool.
Uh-huh.
Good stuff. I like it.
Well, excellent.
Kind of reminds me, you know, got that white beard going on and everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Got that pound dog look, you know.
Oh, he does have that pound dog look, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of what I think. Had that pound dog look going on, you know.
Yeah, totally, yeah. Speaking of pound dogs, I've known some of those in my years, but So you enjoyed his energy or whatnot as far as the pound dog goes,
poetry.
Huh?
Poetry. Oh yeah, he had some really good words there. You know, he's really. He's really in-depth, you know, he's really into his stuff, you know, and that really makes it enjoyable for the listener, you know, when they're listening to it.
So, anything else you have, anything else you want to share with us or talk about? We're at this point in the show, we're in the last, you know, hour or so, and we're just kind of like having fun and winging it. Anything else fun you would like to talk about? Caller?
Batman. Is this Batman?
Is this Batman? this is the fellow with the Batman tattoo on the side of his head. Yeah, No, Ben Affleck. No, he's not even officially Batman yet, is he?
Ben Affleck.
They chose him.
God.
He's the chosen one, yeah.
Yeah,
ain't seen a good Batman yet.
Batman movies. All of them have pretty much sucked. The Batman I prefer is the old TV series from 1966. You know, the old campy one, you know, with Adam West and everything. That's the Batman I prefer as far as... And, you know, the comic books, way better than, any of the Batman movies. I'm not a big fan of the Batman movies, to be honest. But,
I don't think they can do with Batman, don't you? They need to put them on Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy? What's that?
I don't know. Some stupid show.
Okay, caller, what's your interpretation? No, what's your interpretation of anarchy?
Anarchy. That's when I took a shit yesterday.
And that was anarchy for you? Like, for your bowels, or did it hurt?
You eat a lot of cheese or what?
It's kind of anarchy getting it out, you know.
Anarchy getting it out, huh?
Yeah.
And how was there any blood? Was it bloody or at all, or was it just you know? What was the wipe like? That's my my question.
Oh, it wiped.
Well, yeah. Okay.
It lung, it made like a plop when it went in. You know.
It plopped when it went in, and how many? Okay, well, here's the thing.
God, because, Batman movie, you know, like plop.
That's pretty much every Batman movie, especially if it has Christian Bale in it. Yeah, it plops and flops cinematically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. no, but right now we are talking about bowel movement. here's a question. This is important. Okay. What typical bowel movement for you, caller? How many like little tiles of toilet paper do you use when, you know, wiping the asshole after a typical bowel movement?
And they unroll when they take a shit. You ever notice that, kids? Like, you the whole thing. I was thinking about counting them out in sheets.
Yeah, sheets, yeah. How many little tiny, like, sheets? This is important stuff. Uh-oh. Somebody, sound like somebody just flushed the toilet.
That would be a neat sound, wouldn't it?
What, a toilet flushing?
Yeah.
Yeah,
is that
you
what
so?
You're requesting? Are you...
All right, I have to confess, I use at least half a roll of toilet paper. Charmin, because, you know, Charmin's squeezable when I take a shit. I have a hairy asshole, and yes, so I confess. Anybody else?
Like
Dr. Quinn, I would like to hear what your bowel movement toilet paper ratio is.
What?
What do you want? What? Dr. Quinn,
wait,
are you that drunk
that
or
again?
High? Toilet paper ratio when wiping the ass after a major bowel movement.
Okay,
this is important, groundbreaking stuff.
This is science.
Well, it is science to a degree.
So it's lots.
Yeah.
Somebody's playing music.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that you, caller? I think the caller's jamming. Caller, are you jamming a little bit? Is this a post dump jam? Let's hear it. Just jam for us. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a live jam.
Yeah.
Live jam.
Did you request I want to hear some fish? Today.
Much there, Mr. Pound Dog Jr. That was sweet, man. Thanks for calling and sharing that with us, buddy. You have anything else you want to talk about or add, or is there? I mean, how's your night going, man? You, what's going on there?
And I'm enjoying some poetry there on your show. There, I enjoy that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The guest we had on was pretty wild and crazy, huh?
It was. He's right up my alley.
No doubt. He's right up my alley, too. He lives, like, right there in the state next to me there in Kentucky, where my daddy grew up. So, yeah.
Yeah, about 200 years ago, my family came from there.
200 years ago?
Yeah. The other day ago.
Hey, do you mind if we say your name on this show?
Just
that little jam you gave us. Huh?
Pound Dog Jr.?
Pound Dog Jr. Those of us in the know who that knows who that is. Pound Dog, there was only one original Pound Dog. And we got Pound Dog Jr. here calling in and jamming for us, and that was pretty sweet, man. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome, man. Welcome.
Yeah. Sweet. All right. My gosh, we got 2 minutes left in the 2 minutes left in the show here, guys. Wow.
Zoomed by this week.
It sure did zoom by. I mean, we still have the archives if we want to, like, really move forward and talk about crazy shit here in the archives. But otherwise, you know, we'll just kind of let it go and move forward. What do you guys think? You guys have some important stuff you want to talk about in the archives, or do you guys just want to, like, chill the fuck out?
I'm coming down off of several pumpkin pie martinis, which were better than sex.
Okay.
Well,
pussy. Pussy.
Oh, by the way, did you hear what our fearless leader did last week or earlier this week?
Who's your fearless leader? I don't know.
Yeah, who?
Our fearless leader, Ms.
Barack Obama?
1L.
Oh.
No, 1L.
Oh, okay.
Did you see it?
No, we have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm not on martinis. I didn't see a whole lot.
All right, guys. We're going to clock out here. We're going to clock out with a little bit of a back in baby's arms. This has been a great show, and special thanks to Ron Whitehead and, well, of course, my co-host and Pound Dog Jr. for that nice little feast there at the end there. Well, we'll see you guys next week, or if not sooner. We'll be back soon. Been a great show. Adios.
Bye. Later. Don't know why we quarrel. We